Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood of CNBC, and this is On Point. Stars and signs. The planets align. Mercury's in retrograde. The return of Saturn. Astrology is making a comeback. A dawning of a new age for the New Age movement. Millennials are embracing it, making it a meme in the online culture. They may be skeptical of the science, but they're serious and sincere about the benefits, about how it helps them make sense of a confusing world and their place in it. This hour on Point, what's behind this turn to the stars? Joining me now from Washington is Julie Beck. She's an editor at The Atlantic who covers health and psychology. You can find her piece headlined "The New Age of Astrology" at our website, onpointradio.org. Okay, we're going to have Julie Beck in a second. We don't have her just yet. But before I go to Julie Beck, I want to play a little bit of sound. This is from Susan Miller. She's the founder of Astrology Zone, a website that's been around since 1995 and has a cult-like following. Miller doesn't only post monthly horoscopes on the site. She also had a short-lived video series where she discussed astrological predictions. Here's a clip from her January 2017 broadcast.
We have a cranky full moon. It's the only way I can put it. It's a full moon in Cancer, which rules home and family. But everybody will feel this full moon in a different way. It falls on the 12th of January. Something's coming to culmination. Relationships that are weak to begin with may break.
Now, while we wait to make our connection with Julie Beck, I want to bring in somebody who does this for a living. Joining me from St. Paul, Minnesota, is Claire Comstock Gay, an astrologer who writes a weekly horoscope for New York Magazine's The Cut. Claire Comstock Gay, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Thanks.
So, Claire, you're one of the millennials that we're talking about. Tell me how you became an astrologer, how this phenomenon came to your attention, and how one does become an astrologer.
Sure. So I started writing horoscopes in 2012. At that point, a friend of mine was editing for a small website and wanted to run horoscopes. I was kind of casually interested in astrology at the time, and I kind of hesitated. I didn't feel like I had the knowledge to write horoscopes for people. And she said it was fine. I could kind of learn as I went, and I did. So I wrote for that site for a few years, then wrote for another website called The Toast. And when that site closed down, I started writing horoscopes for The Cut. And as far as getting into astrology, right, it really was a personal, casual thing at first. I got into astrology kind of a little bit before this real current resurgence was happening, and learned in a lot of ways as I went along.
Now, let me do an acid test of how widespread this phenomenon is. Your sister, Abby, happens to be a good friend of my daughter's. is your sister into it, and are many of your friends into astrology?
Yes. Yeah. My sister is, not as much as me, I think. And a lot of my friends are as well. And I think something that's really wonderful about astrology is that it really kind of expands and contracts to meet you, you know, where you want it. And so it's really easy to be into astrology in a super casual way. And it's really easy to go really deep. And so most of my friends are into it in some way or another, kind of along the spectrum of how deep you want to go.
Julie Beck, do we have you on the line now?
Hi, thanks for having me. Sorry about that.
Not at all. Welcome to the show. Julie, how did this phenomenon come to your attention to produce that piece that you wrote in The Atlantic?
It's something that I just sort of started ambiently noticing online, I would say. You know, I noticed that a lot of sites were having horoscopes. I noticed a lot of people that I follow on Twitter, for example, like tweeting about Mercury retrograde or you know, other astrological concepts. And so it just was suddenly sort of in the air as far as I could tell. And I wanted to see who was into this. Was this a new thing? Why was it seemed to be popping up now?
And do you think that this is something that a very broad slice of millennials are pursuing and interested in, or is this a niche phenomenon?
It's a really hard thing to quantify because people don't do really surveys, or Pew doesn't do a ton of surveys about who is into astrology and who's not. I think there was some statistic from like 2009 or something that said, 29% of people believe in astrology, but like, what does it mean to believe in astrology? So it's hard to say. I think that it has been sort of creeping up in the culture for the past couple years or so, and it's sort of reaching a peak now. It might not be a peak, but I think it's reaching about as the saturation point it's going to be at, which is still not extremely mainstream.
It may not be extremely mainstream, but this is something that has some historical depth to it. And I want to play a clip from a 1933 film, I'm No Angel, in which Cary Grant's character, Jack Barton, goes to visit Tyra, played by Mae West, to try to convince her to leave an engaged man alone.
Do you really care for Kirk? I mean, do you love him?
Well, I don't know. See, my horoscope says so.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
I'm afraid I don't understand it myself sometimes. You see, it describes a guy. I mean, a man like Kirk.
Surely you're not being serious.
Well, I certainly am. Why, my whole life is ruled by astrology.
You mean to tell me that simply because Kirk fits some vague description in your horoscope that you deliberately break up things between him and Miss Hatton?
Well, maybe it'd be a good break for him.
So, Claire Comstock-Gay, is astrology a supplement to dating apps?
You know, I think it is. I certainly know people who want to know the sign of anyone they're going to meet on a dating app or anyone they're going to meet in life, honestly. And I think that something that's fun about it is, right, in a lot of ways, you're not looking for astrology to tell you what to do. You're looking for astrology to give you permission to, ask for what you wanted anyway or do what you really wanted to do already.
Julie Beck, is it significant in among those who follow astrology that they believe in it in some concrete way? Or is this escape? Is this something that is an amusement for them?
I think that the question of whether they believe in it or not is the wrong question. I think believe is the wrong word. The people who I talked to didn't really describe astrology as a belief system or a science as much as a tool or a language. And so I think people are into it to varying degrees, but it's something that they find useful, whether or not they necessarily believe it's real or that, Saturn is literally doing X. It's more of a way to talk about patterns in life and seasons of life and all that.
Now, Claire Comstock-Gay, I happen to have in front of me your Madame Clairvoyant column for this week with the January 15th week horoscopes. I'm a Scorpio, and I'd like you, if you would, to read me my forecast.
Sure. So, Scorpio. To live in this world, sometimes you have to hold your truest self in check while you do the solid, uninspiring work of living. This week, though, you can stretch your limbs again. There are days for dreams, brave and vast. You've seen scarcity and you've seen loss, and you can see the dark world as it stretches out in front of you. But you've seen magic, too.
Well, I would say you're correct about that. I have had some magical fun this week on Point. But tell me, if I'm the ordinary Scorpio consumer out there, what do I do with this information? Or how do you, maybe put it differently, how do you think your readers take the message that you send them?
Sure. So I think, the difference or the different thing I'm trying to do in my work versus, another really popular astrologer like Susan Miller or somebody like that is she's really working on giving solid, concrete life advice based on astrology. And so you'll hear her often tell people when it's a good week to, start a new job or, start a new relationship or end a relationship. And for me, that's less useful. For me, I'm more interested in kind of using astrology to get at our feelings and our moods and help, help us kind of unpack or feel our emotions in a week.
Julie, do you consume astrology? Are you one of the people that you're writing about?
Well, in the past few months while I was working on this story, I was consuming a lot of astrology. you know, I think it's something that I will find interesting off and on. You know, I found it very journalistically interesting, just to see what is appealing for people about it, like what, how it can kind of frame the narrative of your life. And it's very compelling to read, right? Just like from a purely narrative literary standpoint.
Why do you say compelling?
It provides a really interesting framework. The thing that I've found so interesting talking to people who are into astrology is they talk about it as a language, and it has these sort of, it's sort of a shorthand language, right? Like you can use these symbols of the planets and of the zodiac signs, and you can combine those in different configurations to describe, you know, more complex concepts of personality or of relationships or of just times, seasons in your life. And so I think it is a very interesting framework with which to think about your life.
A way to see some coherence in events that might otherwise feel random?
And that's like the human condition, right? Like all we're ever doing is drawing connections between probably unrelated events in our
right.
lives. So, I mean, if you want to do that through astrology, like that's one way to do it. If you want to just, you know, kind of construct a narrative for yourself, like we're always doing that anyways.
Fantastic. Hold that thought. Both of you stay right there. We're discussing the resurgence of astrology, especially among younger generations, Gen Xers and millennials. Here's a taste of the phenomenon boomers will recognize, the fifth dimension's Aquarius, written for the 67 musical Hair. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA, the podcast that takes you inside the Latino conversation. Each week, we'll take you into one story that will fascinate and often surprise you. Listen to Latino USA on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Is Mercury in retrograde? Or is that the excuse that I've always made? 'Cause I want to blame you, but I can only blame myself.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. That's Katy Perry's It Takes Two from her 2013 album Prism. We're talking about a new age of astrology and why more people, especially younger people, are embracing it. I'm talking with Julie Beck, an editor at The Atlantic who covers health and psychology. She wrote about this phenomenon earlier this week. And with Claire Comstock Gay, an astrologer who writes about horoscopes for New York Magazine's The Cut. Guys, I want to dip into popular culture one more time for a moment. This is from the 1977 Kentucky Fried Movie, a feature-length film comprised of short, often irreverent skits. In this one, Ellen Regan plays news anchor Judy Morton. Judy cuts away to Joyce, an astrologer played by Mallory Sandler, who gives this report.
Now it's time for our daily feature, the Astrological Report. A quick reminder, these reports are not intended to foster a belief in astrology, but merely to support people who cannot take responsibility for their own lives. Joyce, if you're a Libra and you've been hesitant about making that big purchase, hold off for another couple of days. Don't forget, your moon is in Sagittarius, not the time for reckless spending. You Virgos can expect an untimely death or perhaps a tragic dismemberment for someone very close to you. Pisces, it's a good time to pull the plug on that machine that's been keeping your daughter alive for the past 6 months. If you're a Taurus, see your florist. And if you're a Gemini like me, well, you can expect the unexpected. I'm Joyce Wilson, your astrologer.
As Joyce finishes reading the report, an arrow is shot into her chest and she keels over. Julie Beck, do you think that people who are consuming astrology today mainly use it for entertainment, or is there any significant number of people who actually act upon what they read and hear?
I mean, that's an impossible question for me to answer. I haven't done a systematic study of who does
sure.
and does not act on their
your impression.
Horoscopes. I think that, you know, I think that the interest that is sort of burgeoning out there is sincere. I don't think it's, you know, ironic, funny interest. I think that, again, I think it's helpful for people to, like, as a tool for people to think about their lives, to what degree they actually act on it, I don't know. There was one woman I talked to for my story who she downloaded Susan Miller's Astrology Zone app, and she just happened to read that in the next year Jupiter was going to be coming into her sign, and if she, you know, acted now to sort of clear out some of the clutter of her life, then when Jupiter came in 1 year's time, like, all of these great things were going to happen. It was going to bring all these great things. And she actually did, you know, go ahead, and she said she used to be going out all the time, drinking with friends, and she started to stay home more, started to, like, date more seriously, cut off, like, a couple of toxic friendships. And then, you know, the year that Jupiter came into her sign did end up being a very good year for her. She, like, got a new job, met the man she was going to marry, all that. So I think that people do sometimes certainly act on it, but other people may just find it comforting or compelling to read.
All right, let's bring our listeners into the conversation. Alex is on the line from Kent, Ohio. Alex, welcome to On Point. Go ahead.
Hi, John. So me and my girlfriend, we're both millennials, and she will wake up and, you know, get out of bed and read her horoscope. And then, you know, I think it's kind of a bunch of baloney. She says that I'm a cusp Cancer, so that means my life's a little bit more chaotic than hers. And, you know, I just don't really see how, you know, ancient star signs can really be guiding my life.
Thanks, Alex, for that. Claire Comstock A., do you think the fact that Alex is a cusp Cancer is an influence on his skepticism?
You know, I'm not sure. I think all sorts of signs can be skeptical. I think, honestly, probably Alex just doesn't need astrology right now, which is fine. And I think Julie talked about this a little bit in the article, where astrology really is a draw, kind of when you need it in your life. I know I didn't identify with my sign for a very long time. And it was only kind of in my 20s when I was getting into astrology that I started to see the connections. And I was seeing the connections, you know, probably because I wanted to see them and was looking for them at that point.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got another caller on the line, Julie from Baltimore, Maryland. Julie, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call, and hi, guests. I just want to say I'm 60 years old, and I've been interested in astrology for 40 years. And I don't think it's just like this new phenomenon. I think the internet has maybe made it more, you know, out there for everybody and more easily accessible. And in my 20s, I was also very interested in, you know, like my love relationship, my job, where was I going to move to. And as I settled down and got married at 40 and had my son, I you know, wasn't as interested in it from that perspective, but I always was interested in it as to how do people relate to each other. And maybe somebody's being the way they are, not just because they're being, you know, feeling animus towards you or what, but maybe part of it is their personality and how to get along with people by saying that it's just part of their makeup. And since my son is now 15 in high school, I've gotten back into astrology. I've actually joined an online group to learn really about the houses and the aspects and all of that, because I feel like for me now, it's more on a spiritual, a worldly level. I mean, look what's going on in the world. Maybe by us getting in touch with that and coming together and understanding, we can move forward in a different way, and maybe the age of Aquarius will be upon us soon.
Julie, thanks so much for your call, and I think we can all hope for any tools we can use to bring greater tranquility to the world. Let's go to another call. Matthew on the line from Newport, Kentucky. Matthew, thanks for calling.
Hi, John. I think this is really two larger aspects. One, you have, and all I can speak of is the millennials as a millennial. Millennials becoming more post-religious. So you have these young people who are often underemployed, heavily in debt, little access to health care because of changing laws, who are desperate for something to look at, look for. And traditional religions aren't offering that anymore. So they're looking toward these things. And sometimes it's serious and sometimes it's not. I'd say most of the people who look at it seriously are that small minority of millennials who are uneducated. But, you know, speaking for myself, I'm IQ top 2%. I'm drastically underemployed. I drive a car almost as old as I am. And every now and then I buy a lottery ticket and keep it in my pocket. It's just as a something to hope for. I don't even look at it most of the time.
Matthew, thanks so much. That is a very compelling perspective. I want to ask Claire Comstock-Gay, does Matthew sound like part of your readership, and do the motivations that he was describing ring true to you?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, and I'm glad he brought that up. I do absolutely think, that kind of the millennials, not just kind of our post-religious, as you said, situation, but really our economic situation, I think, influences a lot what's going on and why millennials like astrology so much. Or not like it, but, feel connected to it. I think, our economic futures are a lot less secure than previous generations have been. Politically, things are scary and confusing right now. And it's kind of nice to look to something bigger than us that's not, threatening, that's not scary. It's just the skies.
Claire, thanks for that. I want to bring another voice into the conversation right now. I want to turn to Bertram Molly. He's a social psychologist and professor of psychology and cognitive science at Brown University. He joins us from Providence, Rhode Island. Bertram Molly, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Glad to be here.
I want to read something that you wrote to Julie Beck and get you to expound on it. You said, "Let me state first that I consider astrology a cultural or psychological phenomenon, not a scientific one. Astrology provides a powerful vocabulary to capture not only personality and temperament, but also life's challenges and opportunities." Talk a little bit about your study of this phenomenon.
Well, it's really a study of human beings more generally. I think that astrology is just one of the many phenomena that people try to use to reduce uncertainty, find meaning, and both callers refer to that. And there's, in a sense, a large number of tools out there. And I think that astrology seems to hold a strong appeal because it has a somewhat richer, somewhat more intellectual side to it. Now, I'm not talking about the 12 zodiacs in a newspaper because that's completely simplifying. But I think people are attracted to the complexity of the houses that are life tasks and the planets that are forces and their own opportunities. And the ambiguity that this complexity creates just really allows people to find maybe intuitions that they already have and provide confirmation of existing beliefs and wishes. And it provides some kind of reduction of this uncertainty, allowing them maybe to predict and occasionally explain some things that are otherwise very difficult to understand.
Is there in psychology a good deal of scholarship on this subject?
No. Even coming online is probably a slight career endangerment. I think astrology can be studied, as I said, a cultural psychological phenomenon. And I think it's a fascinating phenomenon. But just as psychologists have for a long time been reluctant to study religion or other metaphysical belief systems, astrology, palm reading, clairvoyance, all these things are really sort of marginal. But there is psychology of meaning. There's a psychology of how people deal with uncertainty. And I think a lot of those insights apply to the kinds of questions we might have about astrology or related tools.
Now, I think it's worthwhile to point out that as marginal as the questions sometimes are, this phenomenon has gotten to the highest points in American society, certainly in the past. Ronald Reagan's former chief of staff, Don Regan, caused a stir when he published memoirs detailing the former president Ronald Reagan's interest in astrology. It was spurred by his wife, Nancy. In this old interview with Discovery Science, Joan Quigley, the astrologer who advised the Reagans, talks about her influence.
I timed all the press conferences. I timed most of the speeches. I timed when he would take Air Force One, when he would take off, and when he would land. I did a chart for Anthony Kennedy to nominate him as a justice for the Supreme Court.
Julie Beck, when that came out years ago, possibly before you were born, a lot of people made fun of Nancy Reagan for relying on that. You think people would make fun of a leader who leans on astrology today?
I think probably they would. I mean, I think there's still a stigma to it. But I think, you know, I probably would not use astrology to plan something that important to me as if I was running a country or something. I think that kind of speaks to a point, or rather speaks against a point that a caller made earlier, which is that, you know, there may be this stereotype of people who are interested in astrology as like people who are very uneducated, people who are just rejecting science, or they don't understand what science is. And I don't think that that's true. I think, you know, people who I spoke to were very educated, very smart, and they still found this to be something that's useful, even though it's not a science.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Kavita on the line from Boston, Massachusetts. Kavita, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Hey, John. Thanks much. I spent a year on a research fellowship in India about a decade ago, and it's also where my parents are originally from. And while I was there, I used to have aunties and others, primarily women, telling me a lot about astrology, you know, even down to, say, good times of day to leave the house or not leave the house when I was going on a trip. And to me, it became this symbol of a society where people have less control over their lives, you know, in India, women in particular. So it got me thinking, you know, as Claire noted earlier, millennials in the U.S. are facing an era of downward mobility. They can't hope for their lives to be as good or better than their parents, and even though they're more educated than them, right? So I think it just makes sense that when you have less agency and more uncertainty in your lives, and you're seeing it in your peers as well, you know, consciously or unconsciously, you might look to other areas and other forces that might be controlling, that might be pulling the strings.
Fascinating point, Kavita. Claire, does that ring true to you? Is this about women and a feeling of loss of control in their lives?
Yeah, I think there's absolutely a lot of truth to that. And I think it's about, kind of as Kavita said, like a lack of agency. I think it's also about, you know, levels of access to traditional modes of knowledge. Like for myself, I got really into astrology kind of because of queer community in Brooklyn when I was in my early 20s. And I think for that, touching on a few points from earlier, right, it's about not having access necessarily to traditional modes of knowledge, not having access to traditional forms of religion. When you don't have the power or when you don't have the access, you know, astrology, there's such a low level, a low, you know, entry gate. There are no gatekeepers. It's really easy to get into it.
Julie, did you find in your reporting that this was more of a female than a male phenomenon?
You know, I think that there is I did get that impression, but it's, again, it's a very hard thing to measure without good, like, demographic data or statistics or anything. And, you know, I got to a certain point, you know, I was like, I would really like to talk to some men who are interested in astrology, and I was absolutely able to find some. So I don't think, you know, it's an exclusively female phenomenon.
Professor Molly, do you find disproportionate interest among your students one way or the other?
No, I don't think this is much about female-male differences in interest. Perhaps men would be less likely to admit if they're interested in these kinds of tools.
Why?
I think there's a general expectation of greater rationality and control, and this admission that one has less control is more uncertain, I think kind of contradicts the male stereotype.
And do you think fundamentally uncertainty is the driver of this?
It's certainly one element. We have to realize that humans are this unbelievable learning machine. We explore. Our minds are flexible. We have understood so many things about the universe, about ourselves. And I think we just want to understand more. And so astrology and many other tools are, in a sense, allowing us to go a little further in this striving for understanding, even if it is absolutely not compatible with some of the things we know from science.
Guests, hold that thought. We're coming right back. Here's the London Symphony Orchestra performing Gustav Holst's The Planets, each movement named for one. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Hello, just dropping in to remind you about Here and Now. We cover the day's most essential news with context so you know the why and what's next. A fast-paced snapshot of the world every day. Listen to Here and Now on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. We're talking about a resurgence of astrology, especially among younger generations. I'm talking with Julie Beck, an editor at The Atlantic who covers health and psychology. You can find her piece headlined The New Age of Astrology at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm also joined by Claire Comstock-Gay, an astrologer who writes horoscopes for The Cut, and Bertram Molly, a social psychologist at Brown University. We played a clip about the Reagans a few minutes ago. Let's go to some Bush millennial interest in this topic. In October, during an appearance on the Today Show, Jenna and Barbara Bush, daughters of former President George W. Bush, talked about their zodiac signs with Savannah Guthrie and the Today Show.
What's your star sign, your zodiac sign?
We're Sagittarius.
Okay.
We should have said that in unison.
Yeah. Do it again.
You're both together?
We're Sagittarius.
Hope that Kathy Lee can teach you about unison.
Yeah,
they
show how to do that.
You guys, the rest of you, you know your star signs, right?
Uh-huh.
Are you into it? Are you into astrology?
No.
Do you believe it?
Yes.
Well,
when it's Sagittarius are generally the best.
Yes.
We're adventurous, and only the good things do I believe.
So Barbara and Jenna seem to be into it. That's an example of the phenomenon we're talking about. And I want to go back to the phones. We've got Taylor on the line from Beaufort, North Carolina. Taylor, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. Thank you. I wanted to follow up on the question of people who are born on the cusp of a sign. I started getting a little more into astrology a few years ago, and I had always looked at Virgo.
Are you a millennial, Taylor?
Yes, I am. I'm 30 years old, about the same age as the Bush girls. but I'm a Virgo. I was born 5 hours Eastern Standard Time into Virgo. But I realized that I actually identify more with Leo. And I do think there is something to astrology. I wouldn't say I believe everything, but it's kind of a nice way to almost scapegoat issues in your life or take a little comfort, as was said earlier. But how would I go about identifying with one sign or the other if I feel pulled strongly one way, but I'm technically a Virgo? I'd just like to hear their opinion on that.
Taylor, that is a perfect question for Claire Comstock-Gay. Claire, what's your advice?
Totally. So, so I think the thing with the cusp, you know, it's totally real that you might feel pulled to one sign if you were just barely not born in it. I also think something really wonderful about astrology is that there's so much more than just your sun sign. And so, you know, if you got your full chart done, you might find a lot of Leo. You know, you might find a moon in Leo. You might find your rising sign in Leo. There's so many other ways that all of these signs show up in your life. And so kind of like I talked about before, where astrology really does expand or contract to meet your needs. You know, if you're not finding what you're looking for just in your sun sign, you might find a lot more as if you look further into your chart.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Chris on the line from Asheville, North Carolina. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thank you very much. And thank you for everybody else speaking as well. I would like to state my mental program, which is Scorpio on my sun sign, Aquarius on my moon, with a rising and a Taurus. I would like to also say that it's a connection between my right and left hemispheres, which would be like more scientific as well. To explain, I would like to talk about how the electromagnetic fields from the planets also affect our brains, and how excuse me, I'm sorry, I kind of lost track of thought.
Well, I think you've put some useful issues on the table, and I'm going to ask Professor Molly about that. Professor, do you hear in Chris's discussion of electromagnetic waves and connection between the right and left hemispheres in the brain, do you hear a scientific basis for discussion, or is this a reflection of the way people want to use this to provide some meaning in their lives?
Well, I don't want to pass any judgment here. Mm-hmm. There are fortunately connections between our hemispheres, and there are certainly electromagnetic fields all around us. I think that taking these concepts to create meaning around some questions of everyday decisions and political decisions is maybe a little dangerous because we have better sources to inform our decisions. And it's kind of a little scary when you think about Reagan and maybe many other politicians using astrology to ground decisions of world import rather than making use of science that is imperfect and that doesn't answer all the questions but has for many millennia stood the test of time and is ever improving because it has one feature that astrology and religion and many of these other tools don't have. People admit that they are wrong. There are sometimes predictions, hypotheses that we find to be very convincing, and then the data, the world show us, nope, that's wrong. Children have that same approach. They have beliefs about the world, and they turn out to be wrong. And I think this is one of the important elements. And there's a responsible form of astrology, I think, that allows for that room where it's really more about interpretation and trying to help people bring out their intuitive knowledge rather than making predictions or telling people what to do.
Let's go back to the phones. Caitlin's on the line from New Orleans, Louisiana. Caitlin, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Hi. I think this is a comment. I think it's fairly irresponsible to talk about astrology like it has any basis in science at all. There's no proof from the scientific community that star signs mean or have meant anything. And while it can seem fairly innocuous to talk about them as an interpretive measure, the fact that we're covering this story on Point like it has any kind of bearing on our lives, I think is ridiculous. I'm a millennial. I'm 30. And I think that this is bunk.
Caitlin, do you think it's bunk from the standpoint of entertainment for people in your generation? Do you think, in fact, people are using it as entertainment?
I think that we can way too easily conflate entertainment or something by which to pass the time with something to interpret your life with. I think particularly from a science-based standpoint, it's like talking about the dangers of belief. How do we get to a place where astrology then becomes how you're making your decisions? If we look at things like, what's the psychic who makes a ton of money? Madam, what's her name? She's got a multi-million dollar industry based on people calling in to get predictions that mean nothing.
Caitlin, one more thing before I let you go. Do you believe that this is a response, as some of our previous commenters have said, to uncertainty, felt uncertainty in the lives of millennials?
I think if it is, then we need to do better, and we need to answer our uncertainty with science-based research.
Caitlin, thanks so much. Julie Beck, what do you say?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I, you know, it's not a science, and it's not proven in any sense, and I definitely don't want to say that it is, but I think that it's something that we need to be able to discuss as a cultural phenomenon. And, you know, my goal was to look into why this is becoming popular now, what psychologically makes it appealing, what in the culture is having it bubble up. I'm not here to litigate whether it's real or not. Like, it's not. We've settled on that. That matter has been decided.
And I think we stipulated that from the beginning. Yes.
Right, exactly. And for those people who, you know, maybe do take it too far, as I think she's indicating, you know, I'm not going to convince them with one article or one radio discussion otherwise. So I think it can't be something that we just say it's totally off the table for discussion just because it's not a scientific phenomenon. I definitely don't want to frame it as such, but I think it's still interesting to talk about the role that these things play in people's lives and try to understand why.
Claire, how would you respond to Caitlin?
I think Caitlin raises some good points. I think for myself, I think some kind of belief is not a bad thing. Right. Obviously, we've seen religious beliefs, you know, get taken way too far with really horrible effects in the world. We've seen astrology like we've been talking about Reagan, you know, his like total non-response to the AIDS crisis. Astrology didn't help with that. Astrology, if anything, just made his policies bad there, too. Right. In any way, kind of belief, you know, by itself isn't a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing either. And I think we have to be responsible with astrology just like we would with science, for that matter, with anything else.
Let's go back to the phones. Andy is on the line from Worcester, Massachusetts. Andy, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think it's a really fascinating topic, and what I'd like to say is I believe that it's a surrogate activity, astrology. I think that it's an escape. I agree with the last caller, actually, in that I think that it's very relevant, though, in the sense that it indicates people's frustration with industrial society. Myself, what I'm doing to cope with industrial society, which personally I have, it's my own opinion that I have discussed with industrial society. I'm escaping by joining the tiny house movement.
How old are you, Andy?
I'm 25. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I bought a piece of land, and we're currently working on paying off debts and paying off our land. And we're going to go live the rest of our life debt-free and look at the stars every night. And that's the hope at this point, at least. And I think that when it comes to the astrology thing, I think that people are missing something in their lives these days. It's a data overload. I mean, we're just bombarded with information and bills and debt and work, and it's never ending. So I think that it's a reflection of a lot of civil frustration in the younger communities, and I think it's going to spur, it's an indicator of a future revolution. However that's going to go down, I don't know. But for looking a little further, I think we're going to see a big change.
Andy, that's a fascinating point. I really appreciate your call. Professor Molly, is it a surrogate activity, and do you think some of it is a response to a post-industrial society?
I think this is a very viable hypothesis. I think the question really that interests me is why, if true, millennials and maybe people in the current few decades are drawn back to astrology rather than to religion or clairvoyance or many other metaphysical systems. And one might think that maybe religion has been tainted from child abuse to associations with terrorism. Maybe younger generations do not accept the kind of authoritarian hierarchical system of religion and seek out something that might be also a little bit narcissistic and really focuses on them. I mean, the birth chart is all about the person, and then in relationship to other people, to life changes and life tasks. And I think that in that sense, it at least helps with some of the challenges and maybe the increased ambiguity. I actually want to say a very quick quote from the Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy that I found reading up a little bit on the philosophy of astrology. Plato and Aristotle were all engaged in discussions about philosophy, about astrology. And it says here that it reflected a desire to systematically know where an individual stands in relation to the cosmos in a time of rapid political and social changes. And that was 2,000 plus years ago. And so you can imagine that
some things never
experiences,
change.
Yes. These experiences might be more significant now than maybe they were 20 years ago. But, you know, there was the Big Depression, and there were other times of change. And that still doesn't explain why exactly astrology is the one that is now attractive. And maybe because of its internal focus rather than its hierarchical and authoritarian focus, maybe that is one hypothesis that we might be able to explore.
Let's take one more call. We've got Bruce on the line from Berksville, Kentucky. Bruce, go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm surprised that no one's mentioned that there's at least two other systems of astrology. There's the sidereal, which is based on the precession of the equinox, and then a third system, which would depend on the actual width of the constellation. They're certainly not 30 degrees each. So no one's mentioned that, and I regard this as a defect of astrology because of such chaos. And the meaning that these three systems, anybody can choose one system that they want, and everyone has at least two signs, if not three, based on these systems. So I'd like, if there's time, I'd like someone to comment on that.
We will get that comment. Thank you, Bruce. Claire, what's your response?
Sure. I mean, I think, that's a good point, and it's true. And, right, there are, for that matter, there's Chinese astrology, there's Indian astrology, there are many different traditions here. And so for my part, and I think for most millennials, like astrology, as we talk about it now, we're all just working within one tradition. But certainly there are more traditions out there as well.
Julie, did you encounter multiple traditions in the research for your article?
You know, I actually did. People would, you know, mention to me the sort of distinctions between, I want to say it's tropical and sidereal astrology, like you said. But, you know, we write for a mainstream audience, and I am not an astrologer, so I don't have the time to get into all the nitty-gritty of the different systems, looking at it more from a cultural perspective when I'm writing about it. So,
Claire, one final note. Do you see yourself as a writer, as somebody who is going to spend your career on this topic, or is this a portion of your career and you'll go on to something else later?
That's a good question. I don't know. I certainly would not ever have expected when I started writing horoscopes back in 2012, you know, that I'd still be writing now in 2018 weekly. And so I
6 years,
know.
That's a big chunk of your career.
Right. It's a very long time, and I never would have guessed. I really love it. I hope to keep doing it. I work on other writing also, and we'll kind of see, you know, if this keeps up, if this is still something people want to read a few years from now.
Professor Malle, do you see this growing, or do you think it stays about where it is?
Well, if I had a horoscope, I would be able to predict that. But no, I don't want to predict it. But I am interested in what possible alternatives to the challenge of ambiguity and uncertainty that might be available to millennials. And maybe we can work on that a little bit and help them with the challenges with somewhat less irrational systems.
Well, we will leave it there on that note. Julie Beck, editor at The Atlantic, who covers health and psychology. Claire Comstock-Gay, an astrologer who writes horoscopes for New York Magazine's The Cut. And Bertram Malle, social psychologist at Brown University. So glad to have all of you with us. Have a great weekend. And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up Monday, Can We Talk? A psychologist tries to save talk therapy. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.